For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Before we begin, we would like to thank Six Point Builders for their support of our show. Six Point Builders are builders of fine custom homes in the Boston metropolitan area.
Welcome to another episode of Revolution Recap, part of the Believe Network. We're coming to you after the last place New England Revolution finally picked up their third victory of the season, a 2-1 win in Nashville, a bit of a unicorn, a Revs win, and two goals scored. I'm Sean Donahue, joined today by Greg Johnstone. Greg, how is it going? Finally talking about a win here.
Yeah, it's a great week to be a Revolution fan. Our losing streak is over, and truth be told, Sean, I needed a win because I watched the Bryant University men's baseball team in the NCAA tournament this past weekend, which in itself was terrible because they showed they are not nearly as good as some of the other teams that were there. While I was watching them play North Carolina State and getting beaten pretty badly, the announcers brought up the fact that North Carolina State, one of their players is Trot Nixon's son. And that sent me into a massive depression. I ended up drinking up all of the zero gravity beer that was in my fridge for the remainder of that Bryant game because it was just going terribly for us. So I really needed a win because I was watching this game completely stone cold sober, and the Revolution came through. It's like they knew that I was out of zero gravity beer. So I really appreciate their efforts and getting the big 3 points on the road.
Yeah, I was watching the Bryant games too. It was nice hearing as a fellow Bryant graduate. It was funny hearing them talk about how the first thing I had to do was Google where the heck is Bryant.
Yes. It's crazy. People outside of New England don't realize that it's the Harvard of Northern Rhode Island business schools. But I know in New England it has a stellar reputation, so the real ones know.
You know, there's going to be a lot of stats that we talk about today, I'm sure. But one stat that I need to bring up before we jump into it is the Revs are on a 3-game winning streak when I host the Revolution Recap. So I heard Andy complaining about not getting to host after a win. This is my third time hosting in a row where the Revs won. I think I might be good luck.
Yeah, I mean, you're just asking to have to host every single game because that's basically what the Revs need to do to get back in the playoff hunt. Actually, Sean, does this count as four? Because I don't know if you know this, the Revs won an inter-squad scrimmage last week. So really, the last three times you've hosted, the Revs have won 4 games.
It's a great point. Well, yeah. Before we go too long, I do have to mention our sponsor, BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for the NBA and NHL playoffs this season. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds when the games are being played. When the game's over, head on over to their online casino and get in a game of blackjack or poker or unwind with one of their over 150 slots games. Head to the website today and get in on the action. Don't forget to use promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. I got to start letting people know when I'm hosting the show so they can bet on the Revs to win those games.
Now that you've mentioned this, I know when you're hosting, since I make the schedule. So I'm definitely going to be betting on the Revs when the lines open on BetOnline. I'll get that advantage before the market knows if you're hosting that week. So and I guess we need to fade weeks Andy's hosting then too.
I think that's accurate. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, with that, let's jump right into our key takeaways, which are brought to you by our friends at the Rebellion Supporters Group. Be sure to check them out on Twitter at AnyRebellion and on their website, anyrebellion.org. Greg, what is your takeaway from this one?
I don't think we got any questions about Carlos Heel, so I'm just going to dedicate the top of the show to him and his continued greatness. Phenomenal goal scored early in the 18th minute, kind of set the tone. Carlos Gil now 5 of the 11 goals that the Revolution have on the season. He's still, I think, third in key passes in MLS. I think in terms of expected assists, I was looking it up last night. I think he's like 7th or 8th, so it's not too great, but he still should have a lot more than one or two assists. He might have gotten the second assist on the Esmir goal later on that night. So he's still having a really solid season despite the lack of offense around him and offense from this team. And I mentioned this on the Blazing Musket because I did the Three Thoughts article last night. But three of Carlos Gil's 5 goals have a expected goals a probability of 0.05 or less. Last night's goal, there was a goal in Atlanta and a goal against DC United where seemingly all kind of similar, all from kind of different spots on the field. But both times he's kind of cutting center. He starts on the right. He's kind of cutting center and then has basically a perfect shot with his left foot. And I don't know if you felt this way, Sean, but when I saw him cutting past defender and defender and defender on Nashville, I knew if he was going to get the spot and space to shoot it, he was going to bury it. So it's just nice to have Carlos Gil kind of pull some magic out of his hat every now and then. And I think last night really set the tone that the Revs were able to get that goal early. It certainly felt like they played with a lot more confidence as well once they had the lead. So yeah, very just positive marks for Carlos Gil. I don't think we talk about him enough because I think it goes without saying, but just a phenomenal goal last night, and I think it really set the tone.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, his expected assists isn't that high this year, but he still has created 44 chances for the Revolution, which is good for fourth in the league. And the Revs have played, you know, less games than most teams. So I think if the Revs had, you know, didn't have 2 games in hand on a lot of teams, he'd probably be second in that category. So he's still the great player that he's always been. And he's finding a way to be effective for a Revolution team that doesn't have a lot of guys that seem to be able to put the ball in the back of the net. He's up to 2 assists now this season, 5 goals. You know, if you look at Carlos Gil historically, he got his contributions mostly from assists. And I think in his first few seasons with the Revs, I said in the podcast, he's not a great finisher, right? He's fantastic at setting guys up, but he's not a great finisher. And that's a part of his game that's really evolved over the past couple seasons, where he's become much better at scoring his own goals and not just setting up other guys. And you know, this year when the Revs don't have a number 9 that can finish, it's become even more important that Carlos Gil is putting the ball in the back of the net himself, because he doesn't have that many options to do it for him.
No, agree 100% too. And I also know I've seen some people talking about MLS All-Star voting coming up, and I assume Carlos Gil, I assume no Revs are making the All-Star game, and I assume Carlos Gil is not going to be on it last year, since he was literally this year, since he was literally the last person to make it last year. And this year he doesn't really have the assists total that you would expect. I think, you know, playing a number 10 position, you're going to have superstars in this league. And so I think Carlos Gil is going to be on the outside looking in for this season, but he's still just a phenomenally productive player. And so I'm excited to see, now that Dylan Barrero has come back, I've not had positive things to say about Dylan Barrero the last couple of times I've been on. I thought Barrero looked pretty dangerous as well. It seems like, you know, Carlos Gil really appreciates having him back in the lineup. It allows him to do a little bit more around the field and maybe get into better attacking positions. So it's going to be interesting to see. I expect him to be a double-digit goal scorer this season, which is kind of a ridiculous thing to say for your primary playmaker who's going to lead the team in key passes by, you know, more than twice as whoever's in second place. But I think there's a very good chance Carlos Gil gets double digits, and he's probably going to be the leading goal scorer on this team unless someone steps it up around him.
Yeah, it's hard to say who else would be in competition for leading goal scorer right now unless they sign a number 9 in the summer that can go on a complete tear to the end of the season, because if they do, you won't have many games for him and put away the chances that Carlos creates. So yeah, I think you're spot on with all that. To switch things up with my takeaway, it's, you know, again, the Revolution get their third win of the season, but I'm still left with more questions about this team and still not convinced at all that they've turned a corner and figured things out. Because you look at how this game played out, again, the Revolution only had 0.66 expected goals. And you talk about some brilliance from Carlos Gil, there's also some brilliance from Ezrear Barakhterevich. Those two guys scored 2 goals that in Carlos's, you know, shot was a 0.04 expected goals. Esmir's shot was a 0.13 expected goals. They turned that into 2 goals in this game. You know, I don't know how how much they can replicate that. So it's great that they went out there, got a 2-1 victory in Nashville on the road, required a penalty kick saved on top of two fantastic goals. But, you know, again, they were mostly outplayed in this game. 63% possession for Nashville, 3.55 expected goals to 0.66, 26 shots to 8 for the Revolution. So, you know, good performance from the Revs. They beat a team that was on short rest, that, you know, just got a new coach a couple weeks ago that hasn't had much time to implement the system. And we all know from Caleb Porter that a team can't be effective when it only has a few days of training and doesn't have a full week. So I'm left after this game with, you know, it's great the Revs got 3 points, but I need to be seeing a lot more from this team before I'm ready to say that this is, you know, actually showing anything.
Yeah, and I think there's a real glass half full, glass half empty way to look at things. I think if you look at expected goals, which we do a lot, you know, all stats require context. So you look at expected goals last night, Nashville has 3.55 to the Revs 0.66. Well, they got two penalty kicks, which is a lot. So non-penalty expected goals was 1.98. I also think, too, that, you know, when you're parking the bus and Nashville is just going to be peppering shots, you know, towards the end of the game, you know, their XG is going to go up, even if it's lower percentage shots. So I think the shot differential, you know, it might reflect the fact that the Revs played pretty conservatively and pulled back and tried defending that 2-1 lead. But with that being said, Nashville still had more expected goals at halftime than compared to the Revs. So I think the Revs certainly offensively looked a little bit more dangerous. They certainly seemed to get in positions a lot better. And we talk about that 0.66 expected goals. You know, there's two spots that I know we'll talk about Brioni later, I assume, because we talk about him every week. But Dylan Barrero put Brioni, you know, he gave him two golden chances on a platter. One in the first half, I believe, was in the 37th minute when Barrero kind of spins the ball around around the defender right onto Brioni's left, which is right where he wants it. Brioni scuffs it wide. I don't know if he just misread the spin or mistimed his kick or whatever, but Brioni misses that shot. And then even more egregiously later on in the second half, they could have made it, I think, 3-0 in the 64th minute when Barrero kind of pushes the ball, I think, through the 6-yard box. All it needs is a tap in, and Brioni doesn't get there. So both those chances are zero expected goals. Those don't register an expected goal. So, but those are two still golden chances that if Brioni hits it properly, if he gets another half step, you know, closer to the goal in the second half, you know, that's a goal, or at least that's going to increase your expected goals by a lot if Joe Willis is able to make a great save. So,
I guess correct you there quickly, because you're wrong about the 37th minute one, because he did get a shot on that one. That was 0.31 expected goals, so that was about half of the Revs' expected goals in this game.
All right, well, I stand corrected, and that's really gonna take the wind out of the sails.
But you're right about the second one. That should have been close to a tap in, and that doesn't count for anything because he didn't get a shot off. But
I think my overall point here is that this offense looks a lot better. You know, in weeks past, there's really been nothing generated. They pass it back and forth and back and forth, the U-shape of death. This offense seemed like kind of more of the team of old, where you look at that second goal, Polster reads a play, makes an interception, outlet pass to Carlos Hill. Hill, you know, pushes the ball up. He gets it to Brioni. Brioni with a nice long pass to Esmer, puts it, you know, basically right on his feet. Esmer takes gets space, gets time, and blasts a shot and does what he does. Like, that's exciting soccer. That's kind of the soccer that we saw a lot in 2021 when, you know, Polster would intercept the ball and get the ball to Heal, or they'd get the ball to Tejan, or they'd get the ball to Bo, or they'd get the ball to Buxa, and it would just create chances. So they were actually creating chances yesterday. And I also think Dylan Barrero played pretty well too. He seemed to be, you know, dangerous out on the wing, but he was also kind of coming into the center a little bit and facilitating the ball a little bit too. So I think there's a glass half full thing you can take away where you can say, boy, the Revs actually looked like a competent team. They didn't look like, you know, a historically bad team that has an anemic offense and is bleeding goals left and right. Like, it's a lot better than in past weeks. But with all that being said, they conceded two penalties. Nashville came, you know, a whisker away from tying the ball when there was that shot in the second half that bounced off of K and then, you know, hit off the post. The Revs had 16 block shots. The back line, I thought, played well. I thought Polster and Mark Anthony K had played pretty well. I know they've been getting a lot of heat lately. I thought this defense played pretty well overall. And obviously the goal they conceded was on that, you know, Dave Romney play, which seemed like a little bit of a weak penalty. But at the end of the day, like, you know, Nashville easily could have tied this late in the game in stoppage time, or, you know, or if they converted both of their penalty kicks, and we're having a completely different conversation here. So three wins on the season, all by a goal, all against teams that aren't exactly looking like MLS Cup contenders, you know, Charlotte, Nashville, Chicago, those are all teams that we should be fighting with. So yeah, I'm not exactly crowning the Revs just yet. It seems like they're taking a step in the right direction, but they're still very far off from where they need to be. Is that a fair kind of half glass half full, glass half empty type of take there, Sean?
Yeah, absolutely. I just think if this game plays out, you know, four more times, that I wouldn't bet on the Revs to win half of them. You know, it's just that you don't produce two goals off of 0.66 expected goals very often. And to add to the glass half empty side of it, Esmir is about to go join the Olympic team. So, and I don't think Chonklai is going to be back anytime soon. So, you know, next week you're probably stuck with Barrero and Boateng as your wingers. And Boateng is not a guy who's capable of doing what Esmir did in this game. So they're going to have to find a different way to win next week.
Yeah, I'm curious if Noel Buck, they put him up on the right wing and give him a shot there, because I know he's played there a little bit before. I know he's not really a natural winger, but
although when is his call up? Because he's joining the England elite squad. I don't know if that's the same timing or if he's got another week.
I thought he had a few more weeks, but I'd have to look it up. I might be wrong.
I'm pulling that up right now, because but it's a good question. If he's actually available, then that would make some sense to me. He's not available because they're playing. Okay. They're playing June 7th.
Well, you know what we're gonna do? We're gonna call up Tommy Mac, and Tommy McNamara is gonna lead us to glory. And you know, we're gonna remember Tommy McNamara going to cement his status as a Revs legend by stepping in for Esmir, scoring a hat trick. So is Esmir out next game? So next game against the Red Bulls, so Tommy McNamara hat trick. Is that what we're saying?
Yep.
Okay. Tommy McNamara hat trick. Book it. I don't know what the odds are on Bet Online, but they are probably pretty good. So go check it out now. We'll make Sean host next week so that actually happens.
All right, we got a lot of questions, but before we do, there's one player that didn't actually come up in any questions that I think we have to take a quick moment to talk about, and that's Aljaž Ivačić, who saved the penalty kick. And you know, we talked about the 3.55 expected goals that Nashville had. He had a great game. I think he's been a fantastic addition for the Revolution. We can complain all we want about Ravis and, you know, him being kind of a disappointing signing for the Revs, but so far Ivačić looks like a great move by the Revs to bring him in and kind of cut their losses with their goalkeeper mistakes over the past year. I've been very impressed with him.
Yeah, and I think we've been a little sympathetic to Ravis. I was talking to someone the other day, and they were like, well, you know, you guys seem to, you know, isn't Ivačić better than Ravas? I mean, because I think we've been a little sympathetic to Ravas and how Porter really didn't rate him and really mishandled that whole situation. But I it's pretty clear that Ivačić is a step above Ravas by a lot. Ravas has kind of been a fine goalkeeper, probably an average goalkeeper, but Ivačić has had success in MLS before with the Timbers. It seems like he was cut really for attitude problems, not because of performance problems. And he just seems like he's a step above, and it seems like the Revolution have solved their goalkeeper woes. So I think obviously the PK save is going to be the highlight, but overall, I mean, really not a ton gets by him. He has good reactions. He's athletic. There's not a lot of flaws that you've seen in Ivačić these first few games. So I think this was a great move for the Revs. They're able to get him on a supplemental roster contract. I don't want to rub salt in the wound of Revolution fans, but the Revs were tied to Ivačić last year. I think a lot of people have made kind of this narrative of he's a Porter guy because he was one of the people Porter brought in, but he was on the Revolution's shortlist last year and they were trying to make a move for him last year. So Kurt Arnolfo and Kevin Hitchcock have certainly had their eyes on him for a little bit. And you wonder if they were able to trade with Portland last year to get Ivačić. You know, do those other mistakes not happen? You know, is there a Thomas Vetslík? Is there a Henrik Ravas? You know, what happens in the playoffs if Jacob Jackson isn't starting? Obviously, I think that team would be a lot stronger. So, you know, a lot of major question marks on this Revs team, but it seems like they finally figured out their goalkeeping one, even if it took them three or four tries to get it right. But on a supplemental roster contract, I mean, this is really a gift from the gods that Ivačić kind of fell into their lap basically for free.
Yeah, it really bailed them out from their past mistakes that they were able to bring him in on a supplemental roster spot. That's just crazy and good fortune.
It really makes you wonder, too, where were the other teams? I mean, I guess there probably wasn't a strong need at goalkeeper for all these other teams, and maybe people didn't want to bring him in for, I don't know, whatever happened in Portland. But it just seems kind of crazy that he fell into the Revolution's lap like this. I mean, I believe he was on trial for a few weeks. I think I read that, you know, in the Rebellion Discord somewhere. So, you know, just kind of crazy to me that, you know, he's come in and he's looking like a well above average goalkeeper for the Revs.
Well, I think just to play devil's advocate there, I think what happened was he looked very, very good in 2022. And then he did not look very good in 2023. And then, you know, he got benched, had a falling out with the coach, attitude questions. So, you know, I understand why other teams saw that and said, hey, this guy, this goalkeeper in 2023 wasn't very good. He, you know, was a locker room problem. This is why we're not signing him. The Revs probably said, hey, it's worth the risk, right? He was a very good goalkeeper in 2022. And right now he looks like the 2022 goalkeeper, not the 2023 goalkeeper. So it seems like a good fit for both him and for the Revs. So it worked out well, but I do get why other teams might have been hesitant. Go ahead.
Yeah, fair enough.
With that, are you ready for listener questions?
Yep.
All right. We have got a slightly smaller mailbag this time, but still 20 plus questions. I think we might actually be able to keep this show a little bit shorter than some of the recent ones. Our mailbag today is brought to you by our friends at Subchuck Law. You can find them. You can find their website in our show notes. Starting off, we got a couple questions by email again. Owen Guillot said, missed the game tonight. Did we do anything different, or was it just good finishes by Carles Hill and Esmer that got us 3 points?
I don't want to. Yeah, we kind of talked about this a little bit. There certainly are signs of improvement, but I think you and I both agree, Sean, that this could have easily been a tie or a loss. You know, if Joe Willis makes a phenomenal save, if someone steps up and blocks that Carles Hill shot, you know, if Rioni's pass is just a little bit off, you know, the Revs are coming away with a 1-1 draw. If the Revs concede, you know, the Revs came very close to conceding two goals after having a 2-0 lead. And Vrioni was unable to find that third. So there's still a lot of points of frustration, and I'm not rushing to bet them to win MLS Cup, but there were some signs of life from this offense. And I think Dylan Barrero too, you know, I said this earlier, but he seems to be a big game changer for the Revolution. He seemed very active and involved last night. So just, I don't know, We're getting there. We're getting a little bit better. It might be too little too late, but there were some signs of life in this offense.
Yeah, I do think Barrera rounding into form is a big one for the Revs. They need him to you know, help carry the load of this offense right now, because again, they're not getting what they need out of Rioni. So they need a lot from Dylan Barrero, and seeing him play well in this game is huge. You know, but otherwise, there is still a lot that they have to work on and figure out. And this game certainly doesn't answer all the questions that you have about this team.
And especially if Sean Kalai is out long-term, even if you have a lot of faith in Esmer, you know, you're suddenly very short on wingers. And so if Sean Kalai is out, I think that's a major blow. And again, another guy that can score goals, you're taking him out of the lineup and you're really putting a lot more pressure on Vrioni to finally produce out of that nine spot. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, and if the U.S. does well in the Olympics, Esmer could miss, what, like 4 or 5 games? So, you know, it's not great. Dave Capone, via email, he had more of a long thought, which kind of fits what I think about the game. So I'll read this one. It's longer than I like to read, but it's a good one. So I'll give Dave the full comments here. You'll excuse me if I'm not very helpful. I don't think this game is replicable in terms of getting a win any other week. Nashville is a very, very poor offensive team. This year they've also been bad defensively, which is why their head coach was fired. They played midweek and didn't get that all important full week of training. An interim coach in charge of an uncharacteristically bad defense and a predictably worse offense that emptied their tanks for a win against Cincy on Wednesday. And with all of this, we needed to rely on two very well taken low expected goal shots from Carles and Esmer. We don't create high quality chances that get securely put away. Vrioni is slow and doesn't know he has a right foot. I'm not sure what the double pivot of Kay and Polster works on in training. This performance would have been exposed against better competition. Even 3 points does not change the fact that very drastic changes need to happen. But based on Porter's press conference after he beat Chicago, I'm sure he'll be acting like he's Ancelotti up there. I'm not hopeful for Red Bulls next week.
Yeah. I mean, it's true, and I'm looking at FootMob right now, and they've got some stats here that Nashville is 22nd in MLS in goals scored per match. They're 26th in shots per target per match. And we mentioned the stats earlier, you know, 26 shots, only 5 were on target. The Revs blocked 16 shots, and Nashville hit the woodwork twice. I mean, I mentioned that ball that glanced off the post, and I believe it was stoppage time. It was late in the game. It would have tied the game, but Nashville had a sitter, really. Early in the first half, I forget who it was, but in the 21st minute, there's a shot. Ivicic makes the save, but there's a dangerous rebound, and I think they were calling for a penalty because they said Romney pulled him down. It was pretty soft contact, but the guy kind of gets under the ball and it glances off the crossbar and goes out. I mean, if that shot goes in, then it's a completely different game as well. So Nashville had some chances that they just didn't convert on. They had 26 shots, two off the woodwork. They had one missed PK. And the Revs won by one. So, you know, the Revs got by on that margin of error. But, yeah, I think Dave is correct in his assessment of the game. And, yeah, when you face a Cincinnati or Miami or LAFC or a tougher team, Columbus, it's this game isn't going to go your way.
Yeah, and the a good follow-up question, that's from Ryan Duplessis on Twitter. Do you think this could be a turning point for the season?
Maybe it's just going to give a confidence boost overall, but the math is really against the Revs right now. I mean, they have 10 points, again, through what, 14 games? They have some games in hand, but, I mean, what, you have 20 games left and you need, I think 30, I mean, I've done the math that I think it's 30, you know, 45 points. You need probably 35 points over 20 games. You really need a lot of wins. And I'm just not sure there's going to be this many more, you know, kind of rolls in with that last comment. You know, how many of these types of performances are going to win games against tougher teams? So the math just isn't really that great. It might get them closer to the line. It might get them out of last place. It might get them out of the wooden spoon spot. But I don't know if it's going to catapult them to MLS Cup. I think the math is just really against them. Their start of the season was really terrible. And again, if Sean Kalai is out for an extended period of time, a lot of questions to be asked.
Yeah, you know, on top of everything I said about the performance not being necessarily replicable and not necessarily being good enough to beat better teams, you know, the fact that Chonklai could be out long term and they're about to lose Esmir for, you know, significant number of games makes it hard for me to see this as a turning point, even though there were certainly some positives to take away from this. But I also don't think this Revs team is headed anywhere until they get a number nine that can actually put the ball in the back of the net. And I think this is a good time to jump to another question I had further down my list, but fits in now. Revs fan 1776 on Twitter says, with the Revs 12 points out of the playoffs, can we climb to ninth, or should we just enjoy the wins we get and cherish the cup next year just a little bit harder? I got to correct this question, because the Revs are actually only 9 points out of the playoffs with two games in hand, and the team they're looking to catch is Nashville. So you could call this game that the Revs won a 6-pointer, because they would have been even further back had they lost this. Nashville would have gotten further ahead, and the Revs would have fallen further behind. So, you know, on paper, being 9 points back at this point of the season with two games in hand isn't a death knell, right?
No. Hey, a 6-pointer. This is major playoff implications. Nashville versus New England on June 1st. If I'm going to make this a little darker, you know, they're 14 points out from avoiding the play-in game. One of those teams sitting on 24 points is Columbus, who has the same number of games. You do have three games in hand against Toronto. But, look. Live in the moment, enjoy each game individually, have a zero gravity beer, the perfect beer for zero expectations, and just ignore the standings page. If the Revs go on a 3 or 4 game win streak, then look at the standings page. But ultimately, I mean, as I say, you need a winning streak, you know, but hey, maybe this is the moment that turns it around. Am I right? I will say this too. And Caleb Porter has mentioned they're looking to make, you know, they're planning their summer transfer window. And I think a lot of this is because, he knows there's speculation about his job and he wants people to know that, hey, I'm here through the summer window, blah, blah, blah. But I do wonder if them planning this, I mean, they can do math. I wonder if their plans for the summer window are more 2025 focused than 2024 focused.
Yeah. I mean, and I think the next couple of weeks will help determine which one it should be.
But they say they have the next, I think he said at a press conference, it would be this week or last week, but he said, yeah, we've got the next 2-3 transfer windows planned. To me, that kind of sounds like a long-term build. So I wonder if they're going to do some deconstructing before reconstructing.
Yeah. We got another couple questions that are kind of along the same line. Mild Bill Davidson on Twitter said, what worked versus Nashville, and can the Revs repeat this performance versus New York City FC? Versus Rebel New York, rather. And Charles Maddox said, play was better this match, but will this result bring more consistency, or are we going to let Rebel New York come into our house like with Philly? So I guess two things here. What worked versus Nashville, and is this replicable? I've kind of said my piece that I don't think it's replicable, especially with Esmer going away. But what do you think worked, and can they do it again?
Yeah, I think they did a really nice job of transitioning the ball. I think, you know, I talked at the beginning about how the beginning of the season was a lot of pass the ball around the back, gain possession, you know, have good possession numbers. This game, it seemed like they were able to pass and connect while also pushing forward and kind of beating Nashville, you know, onto their side of the field. So I think the transition play was great. I think they didn't exactly, you know, they weren't too slow with the ball, which has been a real problem in games past. So against New York, I believe this is a home game. I wonder if New York is going to be a little bit more conservative in their game plan, because Nashville too, you have to also be aware of situation they're in. They're going to go for 3 points at home. They're playing the team that's in last place. They've just come 3 points off of Cincinnati. I believe they had rested Mukhtar and Zimmerman a few minutes. You know, I believe they took them off at the end of the Cincinnati game, so they were managing minutes a little bit. They obviously want 3 points at home. So they're going to push up. They're going to be playing a little bit more aggressive because the expectation is 3 points at home against the worst team in the league. So the Red Bulls, they, I don't think will be as I don't think there will be as many open spots, and especially without Esmir, you know, if they're playing Tommy McNamara on the wing, I don't know if it's going to work out as well, because I could certainly see Red Bull just being a lot more effective in kind of keeping the Revolution at bay, and the Revolution having to kind of revert to that kind of you know, slow possession style, which we've seen a little too much this year. So again, might be a good confidence boost. I think that might be, you know, the Revs won the midweek scrimmage, so they're on a 2-game winning streak. I mean, everything is happy in the locker room, according to, you know, Caleb Porter, and everything we're hearing from press conferences. Everyone loves each other. Everyone's shaking hands. Everyone's hugging. Everyone's smiling. So things are great. And yeah, I mean, maybe at the end of the day, they're all friends and they know that, you know, they can do anything together. So, you know, yeah, maybe they can be Rebels.
No, yeah, I think it's going to be a very, very tough game for the Revolution. We know the Rebels are a team that's good pressing. You know, we still don't know how good the Revolution are playing it out of the back the way Porter wants them to do against a team like that. So, you know, a confidence boost for sure from getting this win. But, you know, losing Esmir, Chonkalai probably not being back, and then having to throw Boateng out there, I think, you know, kind of what they did in this game gets thrown out the window. So, well, we'll see, but I don't know that they're going to be able to repeat this against Red Bulls New York. If they do, then, you know, there's a lot to be positive about, and I think you could win two games in a row and beat a good Red Bulls team. You know, then maybe you should be a little bit more confident about this team. Eric on Twitter said, which was more confusing? The Apple TV commentator saying at the beginning of the match that the Revs are fun to watch and play attractive soccer featuring multiple points of attack, or the fact that the Revs then played attractive soccer featuring multiple points of attack?
Yeah, this is like the reverse announcer's jinx, where the announcer just says something completely wrong, and then it becomes true. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what notes they got midweek, you know, yeah, I also understand that Apple TV is, you know, they're selling MLS season pass. They got to keep people interested, and maybe they're just they're trying to convinced New England Revolution supporters to stay tuned in, because there haven't been a ton of reasons to watch this team. And no, actually, this team's a lot of fun to watch. You know, they've only scored, you know, whatever, 9 goals in 10 games, but no, they're a lot of fun to watch. So yeah, I mean, maybe they just saw it before we did. Yeah, again, not the most thrilling soccer I've ever seen. Not exactly world-class finishing by any stretch of the imagination, but certainly a, you know, much, much needed improvement compared to weeks past. So maybe they just saw the highlights. Maybe they were watching the 2021 Revs. I'm not so sure. But, you know, as I say, reverse announcer's jinx. Maybe do it again next week. Do it again next week. You know what? This is the greatest soccer team on earth. Giacomo Brioni is the greatest striker in the world. And, you know, every team in the Premier League should be bidding on him. That's what I think Apple TV should say next week.
Well, on that note, Steve McGrogan on Twitter says, would Andrew Farrell make a better number 9 than Brioni?
Ooh, that's a good one. No, I mean, no. Because whenever Andrew Farrell scores, his goals are immediately taken away by VAR. We learned that last season. So, no, that there's too much VAR risk up there. But if Dave Romney isn't going to be a starting center back, why not throw him up there? Because I know that Apple TV had some nice advanced stats saying that, what was it, Dave Romney hit the fastest speed on the pitch?
That was a little bit shocking.
He's lightning fast. Yeah, throw him in there up top. Why not?
Speaking of that, I think Brioni was also the second highest on Revs for top speed in that graphic. And I'm very confused by all of that.
Mm-hmm. You know what? Lightning fast. As I said, the Apple TV announcers should bring up that stat and say that he's gaining Premier League interest, and he can't stop scoring. And, you know, I'm sure the goals will follow. Lightning fast. Reverse Scott Caldwell. That's a throwback. There's like 20 listeners get that joke.
Yeah, I think the Scott Caldwell speed on FIFA will never get old.
Mm-hmm. Let me add some context. So back in the day when we didn't get as many Twitter questions as we did now, and Sean and I had to kill time, we looked at FIFA ratings, and somehow, some way, we found out that Scott Caldwell's speed rating was like appallingly low, and he was like one of the slowest players in the league. So we nicknamed him Cement Shoes, and I think his speed rating was like 30. And there was like a 2 or 3 week blip where we were just going through like the slowest players in the game and slowest players in MLS, and Scott Caldwell was there. So that's the full context on why Scott Caldwell is as slow as molasses.
And it got worse every year too.
Every new FIFA, they
managed to find a way to make him even slower.
1 year, his speeding rating dropped from like 50 down to like 37. And we're like, what happened in this year? You know what I mean? I mean, my goodness, Scott Caldwell. I don't know.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
Steve also says, Esmer had a couple of goofy moments out there, but quite a few good ones. Got it right when it counted. Is this confidence and corner turning for him?
Yeah, and there was, I know the Blazing Musket is going to have the full comments on Esmer. So go read the Blazing Musket, because Caleb Porter had some interesting comments about Esmer in the post game, where it's kind of like they're working on his development and showing him, you know, little bits and pieces, and you know, he's slowly grasping it. So I do think a lot of that is development. I do think that he is, you know, the other thing too is he hasn't gotten consistent minutes in MLS, right? So I think as time goes on, you're going to see better situational awareness from him. I know there was a point in the beginning of the game where Barrero is looking for Esmer, and Esmer is just kind of pushing up forward. And, you know, the pass goes to absolutely no one. It's a turnover, and Barrero is kind of, you know, clearly not happy with Esmer, kind of yelled back at him. So there's going to be moments where Esmer is not connecting and looks not as sharp. I know we talked about Esmer, you know, booting the ball back to Ryan Spalding a few weeks ago, leaving that red card. He's going to have those moments in his development. But, you know, Caleb Porter made some comments last night that he's slowly piecing it together and he's getting there. And I think, too, when you get Esmer out into space, like in that moment that led to the goal, that's when he's at his best, when he's able to play kind of free-flowing and creatively. So, you know, he's a great talent. He's going to get there. I think he just needs the consistent minutes. And, you know, we've talked about if Shankly is out, the blessing in disguise there is that means Esmir is going to be getting minutes after minutes after minutes, start after start after start. So it'll be interesting to see what he develops into this season. But certainly the tools are there.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost unfortunate that he had this good game and then he gets to go away for the Olympics, right? it is something where he could build on for sure, but you know he's going to have to build on it a month from now.
I do think you're correct, absolutely. But as long as he's playing, I think Barrero, I mean, this is what, year three of him being on a senior team contract. You know, at some point you have to develop your players. And if not, they end up like, you know, I'll give the example of Damian Rivera. You know, he wasted away for 4 or 5 years, never, you know, got the minutes he needed to make the jump, and now he's on loan. And he'll have a decent USL career, but, you know, for someone like Esmir, you got to get the minutes one way or another. So even if he's away from the Revs and it's not the best for the Revs, you know, it's great that he's going to be getting minutes and he's going to continue his development.
Well, and I guess, too, we should note that he's part of the 25-man roster that's going to camp now. That eventually has to be cut down to 18. So there's no guarantee he actually makes the final roster. My assumption is that he has a very good chance of it, but there is the possibility that he doesn't make the final roster and, you know, misses the game this weekend, but then doesn't miss much more.
The Revs could also, I assume, raise a fuss and say, no, we need you starting here. I know there was a hubbub last year with Noel Buck, and it's still not entirely clear who did what, but it seemed like Noel Buck was not called into camp because Bruce Arena disagreed with it or didn't, you know, there was kind of some, you know, he wasn't, you know, Noel Buck didn't get the minutes and Noel didn't want to go and Bruce didn't want him to go or something to that effect. I'd have to go back and look at the minutes, but, you know, I assume if the Revs said, no, Esmir, we need you here, I assume they would have some say in that.
Yeah. There's no obligation to release a player for the Olympics.
Yeah.
So, but at the same time, as you know, are you going to piss the player off if you do that? I need to correct myself too, because they have this camp and then the Olympics don't start until end of July. So, he'll miss this game and then that might be it, until July.
But. Well, we need him for League's Cup. I mean, that's like the most important competition of the year.
Since you talked already about Porter's comments on Esmir, Anime Stoner said, I wish someone from the media team would ask Porter his thoughts on Esmir and Romney's performances. Do you think the penalty takes away from the rest of Romney's good game? And do you think it does? And do you think it does in Porter's eyes? So fortunately for you, Anime Stoner, people did ask about both Esmir and Romney. Greg already talked about Esmir. Greg, could you talk a little bit about what he had to say about Romney? And do you think the penalty takes away from the rest of his good game? Or do you think, in Porter's eyes, it takes away from the rest of his good game?
Yeah, Seth asked about these players too last night in the press conference, coincidentally. So it was good we were able to get these comments on the record too. In terms of Romney, you know, Seth kind of asked the question saying, you know, what do you think of Romney's performance and does it give you something to reconsider when it comes to the center back position and Romney's role on the team? And again, these full comments are available on the Blazing Musket, so I recommend going there. I recommend subscribing to the Blazing Musket as well. I shouldn't have to tell people week after week to read the one outlet that's writing about the Revs every day, but in case you don't, I'll summarize it. You know, basically he said that, you know, Romney, part of the reason he benched Romney was because the chemistry between him and Kessler wasn't great, but he thought the chemistry between him and Arriaga was really good. And so he's going to think about that a lot and, you know, based on this performance and really kind of left it there. Now, that could just be Caleb Porter giving a kind of polite, yeah, you know, he was really good. I'll have to think about it. Obviously, Dave Romney has been probably in people's minds a lot more than Caleb Porter wants. And so I think this might have just been a kind of polite, yeah, no, I'll definitely reconsider it. But it was interesting that he mentioned the chemistry between Romney and Kessler not being great and that leading to them bringing in Arriaga. Either way, it seems like Arriaga is his guy that he wants starting there one way or another, which I thought was interesting. I think Arriaga has been solid, you know, pretty fine. Seems like there are times where he gets beaten behind him. I don't know, sometimes at one point he was like, you know, over by the touchline because he was kind of pressing the ball and Mark Anthony Kay was kind of filling in for him a little bit. And I don't know, it didn't, you know, just kind of sometimes he's in positions that typically a center back isn't in, just kind of pushing up forward. So I don't know, I guess Caleb Porter wants that. And so Arriaga seems to be fine and he's going to be a lockdown solid center back. And it seems like if Romney is fighting minutes with anyone, it's Henry Kessler, which is kind of interesting for them to say, since they just re-signed Kessler last year. They just gave him a 2-year contract extension for $1 million. So yeah, I'm not reading too heavily into it, but it is interesting that Porter said out loud that, you know, I wasn't really pleased with the chemistry between Romney and Kessler, but Arriaga and Romney look fine. So I'll reconsider. It is interesting that was said one way or another, and I'm not totally sure what to entirely make of it just yet.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I thought it was a very interesting comment, one of the most interesting ones to come out of the press conference. And with that in mind, a good question from Mike Kennedy. All things being equal, do you, Greg, not Porter, start Romney with Arriaga or go back to Kessler with Arriaga or a completely different combo?
Just 1 second. I realized I didn't answer part of the last question. I don't think the PK impacts too much in regards to Romney's standing. I think that was kind of light contact, and that just kind of happens. I think overall Romney had a pretty solid night, you know, overall. In terms of Kessler versus Arriaga, you know, what would I do? I mean, what does...
Kessler versus Romney, but I guess you can also flip it to that too.
Yeah, I mean, Kessler and Romney played a few games. I know Kessler was out for most of last season, but they played a few games last year and they looked really good. So it's kind of interesting to hear this. I mean, the truth here, let's go with the truth first. I think the truth is that Henry Kessler has a 2-year contract and he's here next year no matter what. And Caleb Porter likes Arriaga. So that makes Dave Romney the odd man out and trade bait. So I think at the end of the day, the team is going to be going back to an Arriaga-Kessler pairing. What would I do? I mean, I didn't think there was much wrong with Romney and Kessler, to be honest with you. Flip a coin. I think there's a good argument for all three pairings, but I think Arriaga-Kessler is going to be the one going back. Sean, let me ask you this too. I mean, is there something that Henry Kessler does that Dave Romney doesn't do? I mean, I hear a lot of people say that, you know, play with the ball with his feet, blah, blah, blah. Like maybe Romney boots the ball downfield too much, but I don't think Kessler is particularly amazing with his feet either. So to me, I mean, I think I'd lean Romney Arriaga just because I thought Romney did a great job last year. And I think benching him over 4 or 5 games is kind of rough. But at the same time, you know, there's no center back pairing here that I completely loathe with all of my heart. So I'll kick it back to you, Sean, if you have any thoughts on that.
No, I agree with you. I think if you were to pick between Kessler and Romney, I'd go with Romney. I don't know what Kessler does better than Romney. I think when you look at what Porter wants in his system, I think that's where, you know, he doesn't love that Romney. I don't think Romney is the best at kind of playing out of the back and pushing the ball forward. But I think he's better at it than Kessler. So, you know, if it's coming down to that, I think, you know, Romney Arriaga. Now, if it was me and I wasn't considering Porter's system in the equation and I was going to, you know, blow everything up and do things a different way, and, you know, maybe play more the way Bruce Arena played, I'd probably go to Kessler and Romney. But I don't think that's happening. I think Porter's, you know, big fan of Arriaga. I think there's a reason that Arriaga fell out of favor in Seattle and, you know, kind of lost his spot, you know, even as the third center back there. He wasn't playing very good that last game he had for Seattle. He got a terrible giveaway. You know, he takes some risks going forward that, you know, I wouldn't necessarily love, but I think Caleb Porter does. So if it was me and Caleb Porter's system and thinking like Caleb Porter does, I would go with Romney and Arriaga. But I think if it was me to try to change the system, I would do Romney and Kessler. But with that said, I don't know what Kessler does better than Romney. I don't want to say Kessler is a bad center back. I think he's a good center back. But if I'm picking between the two of them, I think Romney is the better center back.
Yeah. This is just, you know, for a team that's had a lack of defensive depth at right back and at center back. I mean, I feel like, you know, since we've been doing this podcast, we've been complaining about the center back depth. Now this is a good problem to have where you have Romney as kind of the third man looking in, it seems like. And I wonder too, if, you know, when Brandon Bye comes back, I mean, could you experiment with 3 center backs with DeJuan and Brandon Bye bombing down the sides, especially if you're short on wingers? You know, do you do kind of a bit of a formation change? Maybe that's a little too much, you know, this far into the season with Porter trying to implement his style and blah, blah, blah. Maybe that changes the equation a little bit too much, but I certainly think you can make a good argument for all three of those guys starting right now. But none of them, to me, exceeds the other one by a great amount. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you could really, you know, if you have to pick one of those three to sit, I think you can make a pretty solid argument for each of them.
Yeah, I agree. And it's just, worth a reminder that Seattle was willing to let Arriaga go and now has to play John Bell in a lot of games as their starting center back. So that to me says something, because you know, Seattle's generally a pretty well-run organization. So if they thought he was expendable, you know, I think there's still a question mark, and I need to see more from him before I'm convinced that he's the best center back on the roster.
I mean, his last game in Seattle, he was completely pickpocketed and had the ball taken right off his feet and led to a goal against Vancouver. And that was, you know, 3-4 games ago. You know, this is his last game before he was acquired by the Revs. So, you know, the amazing with his feet, you know, I don't exactly think he's a possession wizard by any stretch of the imagination, but he's been fine. He's been fine overall. So I don't know. To me, Arriaga and Kessler are the guys. I think that's what Porter has zoomed in on. And I don't know. Some people have got to leave this team to bring in new players just based on, you know, how clogged up this roster is. And I think the Revs think Dave Romney is a good player that is expendable, and therefore he's trade bait. And if the team intends on trading you, you know, they're probably not going to play you a ton because they want you fit and in shape, so, you know, another team doesn't have questions about injury history. So I think that's playing into it as well, if we're saying the quiet part out loud.
Yeah, and Kessler on over $1 million a year is, I don't think, a tradable asset.
Yeah, they're not moving Kessler.
They couldn't if they wanted to.
That was.
Speaking of center backs, DC on Twitter said, how much of a flop is Zimmerman? Both times he went down so soft. I have never rated him as a decent player. Thoughts on him as a player?
I guess I didn't have too much thoughts about him before the game. I thought he's been a pretty solid center back. I believe he's the highest paid center back in the league. I didn't think too much about him, but I agree with the overall sentiment here that a couple times he's looking for calls. One time it worked on the Dave Romney PK, so I guess I can't knock him too hard for it. And, you know, the Revs aren't completely innocent of diving either. I know Carlos Hill had a shirt pull and then ran, you know, a step or two more and then got into the box and then fell down. That seemed like a little bit of an embellishment there too. So, you know, that's part of the game, I guess. But yeah, the one stoppage time where he goes down after taking an arm to the head, the Apple TV announcers made that seem like it was 50-50. I thought that was, you know, kind of crap. I don't know. I've never had much of an issue with him, but also I can't say that I've watched Walker Zimmerman play, you know, week in and week out. Most of the time I've seen him play, it's been at the national team. So maybe I've just thought of him kind of favorably since I've been rooting for him. But yeah, the one in stoppage time, I kind of rolled my eyes at. I was glad the referee, you know, also kind of rolled his eyes at that and ignored him as well. Refereeing, by the way, wild experience. The red card on Arriaga, which was completely, shocking. I don't know why he thought that was a red card, an obvious penalty, but for like 2 minutes here, oh my goodness. I thought that we were going to have a complete nightmare of a game on our hand. And then the second penalty too, I guess it's a foul, seemed pretty light to me. I guess it worked for Nashville. Good for them. But overall, refereeing, what a wild ride that was.
Yeah, just going back to Zimmerman, I think it was, you know, did go down easily in this game. I do think he's a good center back, though. I think he's, you know, one of the best center backs in MLS, and that's why he's getting looks with the national team, where otherwise, you know, just about everyone on the national team is playing in MLS and not in Europe. And when he's healthy, I think he's a very good player, and looks like he's going to be one of the overage players for the Olympics. But, you know, notably, he's only started 7 games for Nashville this year because he's been injured. And I think Nashville's record defensively and overall is actually a lot better when he's on the field. So, I get why if you're a Revolution fan, you're annoyed with him after this match. But I think he's, by MLS standards, a very good center back. And I'm sure the Revs would love to have him on their roster and would be happy with him if they did. And Nashville, when he's healthy, is a much better team. So Trey on Twitter says, is Nick Lima's only trait that he's better than his only trait that's better than Ben Sweat is that he's a better hugger than Ben Sweat?
Well, Sean, we didn't talk about this too much last year, but I spoke to someone in the Revolution organization about Ben Sweat, and the big knock on him was that he gave terrible hugs. I mean, just atrocious hugs, one-handed hugs. Normally when you give a hug, you got to go all in, full body wrap, two arms. Ben Sweat was a side hugger, kind of lean in, give you a one-arm hug. Very inauthentic. The worst hugger, arguably, in Revolution history. So this isn't, you know, this is a question about Nick Lima. It's really about Ben Sweat. Just a terrible hugger, top to bottom. And I'm glad this is finally being brought out in the open. I didn't want to say it, but now that this is being brought up on the show, Ben Sweat, notoriously terrible hugger. I mean, I don't want to... People are going to freak out when they hear this, but Bruce Arena called him out for it. And that was the insensitive comments he got fired for. He actually reamed out Ben Sweat for his terrible hugs and said some really just, I can't repeat them here, but while ranting in front of everyone, reaming out Ben Sweat and telling him to give better hugs, he said some really, really terrible things. And that led to everything that happened. So really the downfall of this organization is based on Ben Sweat's hugging ability.
Well, on that note, seriously, we got this question. I think we got a question about Ben Sweat a couple weeks ago, too, when I wasn't on.
Trey has asked about Ben Sweat.
Oh, it was Trey. Oh, I missed that part. I missed that it was Trey. I was going to say, I wasn't sure if it was Trey or not, but I don't know if this is complete sarcasm when he's asking about Ben Sweat.
I would take this as not a very serious comment.
Oh, it's clearly not a very serious comment, but I don't know if people forget just how bad Ben Sweat was.
At hugging. Yes.
At everything. Not everything.
Including hugging. Bruce Arena would be, with the Revolution, we would have won MLS Cup last year if only Ben Sweat knew how to hug.
I just want to say, I think, I'm not the biggest Nick Lima fan, but I think he gets crapped on more than he should, in part because, you know, he actually puts decent crosses into the box offensively. Just the Revs don't have anyone that's making the right run or can get on the end of it. You know, I think if, like, Adam Buxo was on this team, you know, Nick Lima would have a couple assists already this season, and, you know, he might get a little bit more praise. I don't think he's amazing, but I think he's an adequate fill-in while Brandon Bae gets healthy. I wouldn't want him to be a long-term starter, but I think he gets, you know, kind of unnecessarily crapped on for, you know, he's an average right back, I think, by MLS standards, and the Revs have an above-average right back in Brandon Bae, and they'll be better off when he's back, but I don't know. I've heard a lot of negative stuff about Nick Lima. And I think he's just good enough. He had, you know, two blocks in this game, three clearances, three recoveries, three headed clearances, you know, a couple of crosses that didn't meet anyone, but I don't think that was necessarily his fault. 69% passing accuracy, not great. But, you know, overall, I think he's been, you know, decent enough. And if the Revolution weren't losing every game, he probably wouldn't be getting the kind of the negative comments that he's getting.
Nick Lima is a decent backup outside back.
Yeah.
I think that's the level he's at. He's going to give you decent hugs. Is he as good of a hugger as Brandon Bae or DeJuan Jones? Obviously not. I'm not saying that. But compared to Ben Sweat, I mean, it's night and day. So Nick Lima, he's not the guy you want, you know, in stoppage time of MLS Cup to come out and give you a hug. You want Brandon Bae for that. But he's going to get the job done on June 1st in Nashville. Anything else, John?
I think we've covered this one thoroughly. Mm-hmm. John Stafford on Twitter said, Nashville looked really bad for 60 minutes. Revs definitely better for that part. Pretty even for the rest. Team now might not be the worst in MLS. Promote to the bottom 10%. Barrero Jones back is a big help. So, Greg, are the Revs now no longer the worst team in MLS, but rather just the bottom 10%?
Yeah. You know, this team, if they play to their best ability, they're not the worst team in MLS. I mean, there's some bad teams around. And, you know, I truthfully, in my heart of hearts, don't think they're the worst team. Or they really shouldn't be in contention for the wooden spoon. I just think a lot has gone wrong. I think they really lack goal scoring ability from their number nine. And I know everything's happy, happy, joy, joy, you know, according to public comments, but I really wonder what's going on in the locker room. And I wonder if there's a bit of a stench that's, you know, dragged over from last year as well. And I also think, you know, Caleb Porter wants to implement a system, but, you know, we talked about this in the offseason. By the time he got here, the roster was set, and now it seems like they have to tinker with the roster that, you know, wouldn't have needed to have as much done to it if Caleb Porter was hired, you know, 2 months before, and if Anolfo was hired 2 months before, but instead we had to wait 3 or 4 months after Bruce Arena was gone to name Anolfo, and then we had to wait another month to hire Porter, and we wasted the whole offseason just bringing everyone back, and really I think changes need to be done, and we're now just 2 or 3 months lagging behind the process of, you know, realizing what we need. So, you know, there's a lot of organizational chaos from top to bottom about how the season was approached. And I think really, if you look at the talent on the field, it's not that they're bad. It's just, it just seems like this organization has kind of failed the players to start the year in my opinion. So, I don't think they're the worst team in the league. Bottom 10, probably. Changes that need to be done, probably. Still don't think this team comes close to playoffs.
I mean, they might be the worst team in the East. I don't think they're the worst team in the league. I think I've seen San Jose. San Jose is really bad. I haven't seen Sporting Kansas City this year. I don't know if they're as bad as their record. But I would have said the Revs were better than Chicago, despite the records. But then Chicago just got a win against a good LA Galaxy team. So I don't know if I can say that.
I do not think the Revs are worse than Chicago.
I mean, talent-wise, no. But I mean, after beating the Galaxy, who's a very good team this year, I don't know. Get him a couple more wins before I take him off the bottom.
I would be willing to bet. So right now, Chicago is 15 points in 17 games. New England has 10 and 14. I would be willing to bet New England is above Chicago by the end of the year in the standings.
Yeah, I think it might be a coin toss.
Everyone else, I think you can make a good argument that they're better than that. Every other team in the East is better than the Revs, assuming that there's no injuries or major catastrophic, whatever. But I think the Revs talent wise are just a lot better than Chicago. I think it's ridiculous they didn't take all 6 points from Chicago, to be honest with you. I know that Chicago is ahead of them in the standings and they just beat a Galaxy team, but ultimately at the end of the day, I think the Revs are just a more competitive team than Chicago. I really don't think there's a lot of good on that team.
Well, not to spend too much time on Chicago, but the big problem there is they've spent a lot of money on Shaqiri, and Shaqiri, they play better without him. So that's something they have to figure out.
But, well, they did have a – I don't know if you saw the goal they conceded in the midweek game and like 4 minutes in. But, the ball is in the box for an embarrassingly long time and they can't clear it. And then the ball's just kind of – who'd they play in the midweek game? I'm trying
Orlando.
To remember. Orlando, yeah. Who's also not in the playoff. They're also on the outside looking in. Did Orlando beat Chicago in Chicago?
No, they came back and drew it. It was a one.
Well, either way, it was an embarrassing goal. If you haven't looked it up, it's really early in the game, and it's just Chicago Fire defending. It's just terrible. I think one of their wins against Montreal when Kellen Acosta booted the ball from half field and the wind guided it in.
Yep, a 4-3 crazy game.
New England is better than Chicago, and they'll be above them in the standings. That is a Greg Johnstone guarantee. Cursed Revs. Mark, timestamp this and get back to me at the end of the year when the Revs win Wooden Spoon. No one on the Chicago Fire can hug Sean. None of them.
Oh, boy. Rams are going up. Ole Ole on Twitter says, Porter promise? Or was that last week? That was last week, right? That he promised they were going to win and they didn't?
That was last week. And also, to be fair, it was kind of... Okay, so I will rip Porter for pretending he didn't actually promise a win on 98.5. The context here is that he said, "Oh yeah, the amputee soccer team is going to win, just like we're going to win." He didn't technically promise it. He's just kind of making a video for. So I give Porter a little bit of leeway. It was not as clear cut as his 98.5 interview where he promised a win as he was getting off the radio and then. Tried claiming he was taken out of context. The amputee soccer video where he's saying, yeah, you guys are going to get 3 points just like we're getting 3 points. I think that was him just kind of being rah-rah. So, but yeah, that was last week and they did not win. So even if you do think counted as a promise, Caleb Porter 1-1 in promise games, but he promised to win in the inter-squad scrimmage. So really 2-1.
Yeah. I give him a pass for that comment. It was not the same level of his radio promise, but yeah, it was last week. Traeger on Twitter said, did we beat Nashville because they played Wednesday night, or did we beat them because we were the better team?
Boy, I don't know if I agree with either of those statements. Well, I mean, Nashville certainly has a little bit of a disadvantage playing Wednesday and maybe having tired legs. Similar to how the Revs have a little bit of a disadvantage playing teams that are fresh and have had a week of training while they need to fly back from Costa Rica or Panama or whatever. But at the same thing, that doesn't tell the whole story of the game. And I also don't know if the Revs were the better team. They certainly looked more explosive offensively, but Nashville did have their chances. They just didn't convert, while the Revs did convert two of their chances, both of which were, again, low XG shots. So, again, if Joe Willis makes one or two more saves, they won on very small variance. So, truth be told, in terms of who deserved to win, I think truth be told, a draw was probably deserved. Yeah, I mean, we talked about this at the beginning of the game. There were a lot of positives, a lot of negatives from this game, but the Revs kind of got by on, them making the most of their chances in Nashville, not doing it. I don't know if I'd call them the better team on the night.
Yeah, it's still a weird one for me because it's going back to your much earlier point about the two Rioni chances. You know, all the stats say Nashville was a better team, but you could also look at it the other way. And if Rioni could finish, the Revs would have been up 4-0 at one point. So, yeah, it's tough. But to get to the question, I don't think it's necessarily either. I think the Revs won because of some individual brilliance. We saw a fantastic goal from Esmer from, you know, not the easiest position. We saw a fantastic goal from Carles Hill from not the easiest position. And we saw a fantastic save from Ivicic on a penalty kick. And, you know, those are the main reasons why the Revs won this game. So, I do think that playing a Wednesday midweek game is an excuse. Certainly Caleb Porter thinks it's an excuse because he used it a lot earlier in the season. But Nashville didn't look tired to me. I don't know. Like late in the game, they were still pressing pretty hard and it looked like they could have scored a goal. I don't know about you, but they didn't look tired to me.
No, there was some rotation in their lineup though. I know we say the word excuse, but I mean, they're, you know, obviously on 3 days rest is a slight disadvantage than 7 days rest. And there was some rotation. So I think you'd rather play Nashville on 3 days rest than on 7 days rest. I'll put it that way.
Gabo on Twitter said, were the Revs the better team besides giving away two penalties? We kind of answered this. I don't know if you have anything to add.
No, not really. I mean, the two penalty kicks obviously swung a lot, but I don't particularly think the Revs were the better team on the night.
All right, we got a couple of more serious Rioni questions then. Should Farrell start over Rioni? And these are the last two we've got. A tree with soccer opinions on Twitter says, Rioni's assist to Esmer's goal was surprisingly good. Do we think the guy has a future as more of a facilitator instead of as a number nine role that he sucks so badly at?
Yeah, I think it was talked on the show a little earlier this season about maybe playing him as a false nine, which, truth be told, like, I mean, why not at this point? I think this team works best with, you know, an outright nine, an Adam Buxa type player who's able to get in the box and head home goals and win balls in the air and finish off tap-ins. But I mean, it was a good pass. I don't want to take anything away from Brioni. And I mentioned this in my article on the Blazing Musket too. You know, good run up the side, nice, awareness and a great pass to Esmer. I mean, I think I saw some people kind of splitting hairs saying it was a little behind Esmer, but truth be told, I mean, it was a good pass. It kept the play going and it led Esmer into a spot where he could make something of it, take a defender on one-on-one and finish the shot. So, Brioni has done a lot of things that, you know, he can press. He's a pretty decent passer. I think we're seeing improvements of his game here and there. He's just not finishing. He still just can't finish. And I think that's kind of the frustrating thing, that the only way he can score is he needs the ball on his left foot. He needs a little bit of space. And even when you get him, you know, the ball on his left foot and a little bit of space, he's either a little bit behind the play like he was in the second half, or he scuffs the shot like he did in the first half. So, I think that's always going to hold him back. So I don't know if you can play him in a false nine, if that works entirely. Maybe now if you have Shankly and Esmer and Barrero kind of making runs into the box, maybe he can work as a false nine a little bit, but I think what this team needs is a true number nine.
Yeah, I agree, and I'm going to be a little bit more negative. It was a good pass, but it was a pass I expect a professional soccer player to make. You know, Rioni and Esmer, they were both in a ton of space. It wasn't like it was a, you know, he didn't have to get it pinpoint accuracy to get it right in the right spot, because Esmer had a ton of space. It was kind of a two-on-one situation, and then Esmer had the hard work to do to cut around, you know, two defenders and get the shot off. So, you know, yes, nice assist, but I don't know. I don't think it was necessarily anything to write home about. It was something that, you know, in that position, I'd expect a player to be able to make. So, you know, I don't think he's got a future as a facilitator. I don't think he's got a future as a, you know, number nine in this league much longer. But yeah, you know, if you're going to try him to do something else, you know, why not go for it? You don't have any other options. But, you know, I guess I'm not that impressed.
I'll also say too, you know, if you look at, you know, game after game, you know, his touches, it's really not, you know, he doesn't get a lot of touches. I mean, maybe if you did brought him as a false nine, or if you brought him into the midfield a little bit more, maybe he'd be a little bit more exposed. Maybe we're just kind of seeing, you know, kind of some highlights, because he does have that space. And as you mentioned, this is a play he should be making. Either way, the lack of goal scoring is going to hold him back.
Yeah, and his passing accuracy from Foot Mob is 63.2%. So, you know, is he a good passer? I mean, it's in the offensive third, you know, your passing accuracy should be a little bit lower, but that's not great.
No, he was 7 for 15 yesterday in passing.
All right, last question, also about Rioni. Fern77 on Twitter said, should we be giving Bobby Wood a real run? Can't be much worse than having a complete log at the top of our offense.
You know, I made this comment. I don't know if I made it on the podcast yet, but I said this to someone. I said, you know, since the supporter shield, the only time the Revs have really shown a, you know, have really been winning games and everyone's been feeling great is when Bobby Wood was on a hot streak at the beginning of 2023. Even when the Revs were flying high, a lot of that offensive production, Bobby Wood was being involved either, you know, scoring or getting some assists. I think he had seven goals, five assists. Almost all of those were in the first half of the season. So, you know, completely healthy Bobby Wood. I think a lot of people forget, you know, how effective he was when he was, you know, playing week in and week out. So I know he's getting healthier. You know, we're running Vrioni out there 90 minutes, game after game after game. He doesn't seem to be getting any better. So I don't know if you throw him in there to start right away, but I think over time it wouldn't be bad for Porter, who most of the time isn't using five subs anyway, to give Bobby Wood maybe 20 minutes, 25 minutes to see what he can do. Because if he's able to find his form and if he looks good again, you know, it really changes things for this team.
Yeah, I mean, if he's healthy enough, I think you should be playing him more. I just don't know that he is, right? It's a, you know, chronic knee injury. So, yeah, I mean, again, if he's healthy enough, absolutely. I'm just not sure that, you know, given where he is in his career and his injury history, that he's, you know, capable of playing too many more minutes. If he is, I don't get why he's not.
Yeah, it comes down to his health, and his knee might not be healthy at all. And if that's the case, then you need to go elsewhere because your other, you know, backup striker is Thomas Shankalai. And again, we don't know what lies ahead with him. So, they need to find goals from somewhere. And if it's not going to be Bobby Wood and if it's not Shankalai, it's not going to be Vrioni. So that's going to be their first key thing that they got to address in the summer if they're really going for it this year.
Which goes back to the incredibly dumb comment, in my opinion, that Porter made earlier on in the season about, you know, third strikers. And if you're down to your third striker, you're screwed anyways. Because you go into the season with Bobby Wood, who has, you know, big question marks over his health, and Vrioni, who has not proven he can score in this league. And then you look at the squad last year, they had Gustavo Bo and Justin Renix, who, you know, I don't think Justin Renix was the answer, but, you know, they had Gustavo Bo. So they had three strikers on paper that they could potentially start. And then they go into the season with two and act like you're crazy for even questioning the fact that they didn't have a third.
Yeah. Or again, and I know we've talked about this a ton, but they promoted Malcolm Fry to the senior roster while letting go of Jordan Adebayo-Smith. And like Adebayo-Smith, like, probably not going to be a, you know, world-class player, MLS all-star. Like, I'm not saying that, but, you know, you should have a third striker on your team, right? I mean, even in the days of Femi Hollinger-Hurt-Jansen, you know, he still scored every now and then, you know, by putting him in. Justin Redick scored goals every now and then. So it's good to have depth at that position. And even if they are not the most effective players in the world, it's good to have options there, because when you have someone in a slump, or if someone's hurt, or if someone's not 100%, you know, a third striker still can every now and then convert a goal. And so the fact that the Revs don't have that is concerning, and is really limiting their ability.
Yeah, it just bugs me that I think anyone paying attention could have told you that there were question marks over both strikers on the roster going into the season. So obviously you should have a third. But
Oh, it reminds me a lot about how we talked about there's no backup right back all of last year. And then Brandon Bye tears his ACL. And it's like, oh, we don't have a right back. Oh, I guess Joshua Bulma, who was a winger, who we drafted and, you know, we're maybe going to convert him to an eight. I guess he's not really panning out as a backup right back. So I guess we need to, you know, play Matt Polster as an inverted left back or whatever and move the left back to right back. I mean, saw it a mile away. And yeah. Yeah.
Well, on that note, any final thoughts?
No, I just wanted to say, while we're talking about backup right backs, you know, really good that we brought in an experienced tugger like Nick Lima to come in and fill the shoes for Brandon Bye. No, I had something else, but I completely forgot during my ranting. And yeah, good 3 points, though. Yay.
Yeah, I
Sean, you know, if they doubled their point total, they would be in the playing game.
That's just a sad thought.
Yeah. Also, oh wait, no, I do have one more thought. It's completely reasonable to ask at a press conference why Dave Romney isn't playing when your team has conceded seven goals in the last two games. I also just wanted to say that also. Haven't been on the show in a couple weeks. And that kind of narrative that how dare you ask why the defender of the year from last year isn't playing in a post-game press conference. That's a weird question. It's not a weird question in the slightest. Just wanted to say that as well.
Couldn't agree more.
And
where can people find you on social media? Do you have anything coming up for the Blazing Musket?
I wrote a three. No, I actually, I don't have anything for the Blazing Muscle, but I did write the Three Thoughts article yesterday, and I will be writing every now and then when I am needed. So make sure you subscribe to Blazing Musket on there. You can follow my personal account on Twitter at Real G Johnstone. Mostly just follow our Revolution recap accounts, which Sean, I believe you'll give right now, right?
Yeah, you can follow the podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Revolution Recap. On Twitter, Greg is the one that is usually the one tweeting. So if you have any good jokes there, you can thank Greg. If you have any bad jokes there, you can blame Greg. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever else you listen. As Greg said, be sure to check out our friends at The Blazing Musket. Thanks again for listening to Revolution Recap presented by BetOnline, and we'll be back after the next game with another podcast.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.